Mr. Mathau, don't hurt me. I'm just a child. It's Nescapades, a chronological journey through the North American Super Nintendo library with a few pit stops along the way. We play them briefly, we judge them harshly, we rank them. That is pretty much all you need to know. I am Chase Keys.
I'm a Zero.
And folks, just as Boys to Men once predicted, we have come to the end of the road. The road being the year 1993. And we are here to talk about the games. Super Nintendo games from 1993 for the very last time.
Yep. This is all the rest of them. End of the calendar year 1993, going out with this murderer's row of absolute bangers.
Oh boy, this sure is a bunch of games that we have here today.
It sure is.
So yeah, do we want to run down all the games that we're going to be talking about today, or do we just kind of want to get to them when we get to them?
Let's just start going. We have, I believe, 12 games to get through today.
Yeah, something like that. So, I don't think this is going to take very long, despite that.
Nope. I agree. I don't think so either.
Would this be a good time to bring up how we might want to do guest spots in the future? Because we haven't really talked about that yet.
Yeah,
sure. Since we started doing
this. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, so...
the new format, yeah.
Yeah, so, we don't really do... we don't have guests on for Playing With Power anymore because those episodes tend to be some of our longer ones, and I just don't like asking that much.
It's a big commitment to ask people to take part in that, yeah.
Exactly.
They got to read a whole, 100-some-odd page magazine from, the early 90s, and then they got to spend several hours on a call with us talking about said magazine, so...
Exactly, yeah. And we have had a lot of fun doing that with people.
Absolutely.
But it is a lot to ask from our guests. So instead, we want to just sort of have an open door policy where if folks, other podcasters, content creators want to come on and talk about Super Nintendo games with us, they can just do that. And how we are going to do that is basically just say, hey, I want to do a guest spot. And tell me three games from the Super Nintendo that you really want to talk about. And it is completely open. They can be games that we have already talked about on the show. They can be games that we have not talked about on the show yet. They can be games that another guest has already talked about if you feel like, you've got something else you want to add to the conversation. So let me know on one of the things where I can still get messages. I mean, I guess I'll still check messages on Instagram for now. I'm kind of trying to look to get away from Instagram a little bit, but I will still be checking messages there, and it's probably still one of the better places to contact me. You can also hit me up on Blue Sky. It's open to everybody now as of us recording this, though they don't have private messages, but it's not like it's a matter of national security or anything, so just feel free to drop me a line on there if you want to. So yeah, hope to hear from folks, and hopefully we can get one or two of those out before the end of the year. We'll see. We'll see if there's any interest.
It's very possible that if you want to talk about any of the, 13 games we have on the docket today, you might have more to say about those than we do. So, this is a lot of open ground we're about to... we're about to present to all of y'all.
Sure will be a lot of things that we're going to touch on very, very briefly. So I guess let's get started. Let's get started with the top of this list here. They're not quite in alphabetical order, so I'm not even sure how we got in this order, but this is the order I've got here in front of me. I think it's the order you've got in front of you too.
It is. Yes. It's the same.
Yep. So we'll just go with this list. The first game up for today is a little bit apropos as of this recording, because tomorrow is, the big game, the big hand egg sporting event game is happening.
Yep.
Apparently, Taylor Swift will descend from the heavens and begin the rapture, I think, is what it sounds like anyway.
So,
I don't know.
So, depending on how that goes, you could be listening to this episode in a very different world than the one that we're currently inhabiting. And, I hope it's a better one. I hope it's really good. Hopefully, the world's biggest celebrity herself will make it from Tokyo to wherever the Super Bowl is being played. to watch the game. Good luck out there, Taylor. And for our part right here, we have got some ABC Monday Night Football.
Monday Night Football. I don't know if Monday Night Football is still a thing. I don't know if it's still on ABC.
Oh, I think it is. I think Monday Night Football is like one of the biggest nights for football. Okay. But I don't know if it's on ABC anymore either. So,
yeah
but it sure was in 93. We got the game here to prove it.
Yep. We got talking heads that I'm sure are based on actual people that I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I could look it up, but I'm not going to.
the presentation for this one really does go all in on that sports broadcast thing.
Yes.
With, digitized photos of these various talking heads, a lot of graphics that I'm sure are supposed to look like presentation stuff that surrounded the game itself. Gotta say, it's pretty slick looking. This is a nice looking football game.
Yeah, I would say if you have nostalgia for a very specific era of football, you may enjoy this one.
The gameplay, I'll say straight up, I find just as inscrutable as most football, American football games on the system and from this time period. But I do find myself pretty charmed by the way it's all put together. I like the fact that the title screen has two football helmets that slam into each other so hard they explode. I like that every time an interception happens, they make a cutout appear in the middle of the screen that has a bunch of fans just like falling out.
Yep.
It's got some fun stuff going on that I think livens up the proceedings a little bit.
Yeah. Granted, they play that animation like every time a pass is incomplete too.
Yeah, so. I mean, they play it too much, but it's nice that the thought is nice, I guess.
Yeah.
is what I would say.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. What do you think of this one overall, such as it is?
Presentation aside, it's more American football, and I just can't really be bothered to get all that interested in it at this point. So
now, who did you check who made any of these? I did not actually note that information down for this one.
Yes, I believe I've got that information handy. This one's by Data East.
Oh, okay. Yeah, got it. We'll play another Data East game later on in this episode. Data East making an American football game. And I think in general, Data East was pretty strong on the presentation aspect of these things. So yeah, that continues here. It's not enough to get me actually interested in it, but I do quite like this one's personality, at the very least.
We applaud the presentation, but is that enough to make us want to actually rank this one, or do we still feel like this belongs in unranked because we're just not really?
Yeah, I think it's got to be unranked, personally. Like, I don't think there's enough to... I don't think I got enough out of playing this to make a judgment about how it actually is as a football game.
Also, ABC Monday Night Football is already in the unranked category. Maybe we already did this for a sports desk earlier and forgot about it.
That is entirely possible.
Okay.
That's very funny. Well, it's good to see that I agree with our past selves on this one.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to another sport. This is one that has not yet been represented on the Super Nintendo, and I don't believe will be again. This is Dig and Spike Volleyball.
Yeah, Dig and Spike Volleyball. Who made this one?
Dig and Spike Volleyball comes to us from the good people at Tosei. Tosei developed this one.
Okay.
This one was published by Hudson Soft here in America, I believe. Although okay. I'm also seeing Tonkin House in there. They might have had something to do with it as well.
Okay.
So
what did you think of this one?
It is seems like a volleyball game. It seems like the rules that I remember, at least from when I played volleyball in gym class in elementary school and then never again in my life.
Sure.
You can play volleyball in like a
court, I guess, is where you'd play
a volleyball, like an indoor volleyball. I don't know what you call that. An indoor volleyball court, indoor volleyball arena. I don't know.
Sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's the 4-player volleyball game, 4 players per side, volleyball game.
Yeah. Is it four or five players per side?
Oh, it might be five. Yeah, that's right, actually. Yeah.
But then you also got beach volleyball, where you can play as two people per side.
Yep.
That's where you get to play as the ladies, because guys don't play beach volleyball, I guess.
I guess not. I don't know. I do find the presentation of the beach volleyball side of this a little more charming.
Oh, yeah.
My big issue with this game overall is that I find it, on the whole, really charmless. I find it really kind of weirdly barren in a lot of ways. But I do like the presentation of at least like the menus and everything on the beach volleyball side. It's got a good kind of, you know, kind of Malibu sort of aesthetic. And I wish there was music during any of the actual gameplay.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It plays okay enough. I wouldn't be interested enough to play more of this, but it seems pretty okay as a volleyball game. I don't know. There's not much here, I don't feel like. I like the team names in maybe in both sides of this, but definitely in the beach volleyball side. A lot of the team names are named after other Hudson Soft properties, so that's kind of funny, but I don't know. There's not much meat on them bones with this one. What do you think? Do you think there's anything here?
I was impressed with the fact that there is like a training mode where you can train like,
that's nice. Yeah.
Like timing on specific actions, but
yeah,
I don't know if it really helped me get better at the game. Like it helped me time hits for certain actions, but you know, you've still got to be a little bit cognizant of like where your player is in relation to where the ball is going. And, you know, the camera swings back and forth between the sides in a way that makes it hard to know what's going on.
Yeah, it does make it a little hard to track your own player's motion and figure out like where you need to be moving them to get in the right place. But yeah, like I feel like the thing I realized about this game, the more I played it, is that like the timing of the button presses is like the most important thing. And like the movement doesn't take care of itself, but it's less of an issue to get to like different parts of the court than it initially seems like it is. But yeah, it's a little counterintuitive in some way that I can't quite put my finger on. Like I didn't have a bad time playing this, but I didn't really have a great time either.
Yeah.
I just sort of had a time, you know?
Yeah. I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, you know, the presentation in a lot of ways is pretty bare bones. You know, it's got some interesting ideas. Like I said, with the training mode, I think is more than a lot of these games have had.
Yeah, definitely. Like,
usually training mode just means, hey, just play a practice game with, you know, not really any stakes involved, which I don't know if that's really, you know, if that really helps you become a better player if you're just really lost at sea with some of the rules and controls.
Right.
I kind of feel like I could rank it as a C because it seems completely competent at what it's trying to do. I could rank it as a D because, like, I don't think it's going to convert anybody who wasn't already just like really, really wanting a volleyball game for the SNES. And I don't know who that person was. Or I could say it's unranked because, you know, I'm not a volleyball expert and I don't know. Like I could go one of three ways. Like, I don't think that this is a failure enough to say it belongs in the F, but
no, it definitely doesn't. In a lot of ways, functionally, this does not feel that different from some of the tennis games we've played. And I feel like we have mostly been ranking those.
Yeah. You know, I could kind of see that. And I think that like a similar perspective from what we usually get in tennis, where like,
yeah,
you're looking at the court as if, you know, you've got one side towards you and one side away from you, would have been a better way to read this game. And, you know,
I pretty much agree. Yeah.
So maybe it goes in the D tier then for that reason.
I think that sounds, I think I've talked myself into it being a D tier game. I think that's what makes the most sense to me.
Okay. Dig and Spike Volleyball. The D is for dig. I don't actually know. Is dig like a move in volleyball? I don't actually know.
I don't know enough about volleyball to answer that question. Spiking is a move.
Yep, I know about spiking.
But I don't know about digging.
All right, well, I guess we'll move on to yet another sports ball game. This is the other football. This is World Soccer 94.
Yeah.
This one was developed by Rage Software.
Rage.
And published by Elite Systems. It's more soccer. I don't know what to tell you.
It's more soccer. It's so fast. Like, it's too fast, honestly. Like, I'm kind of impressed by how smoothly it scrolls.
Yeah.
But I found it – so, like, the players in this are really small. The ball is just, like, a little dot of – like, a little square dot of 4 pixels. And, like, it's really hard for me, at least, to keep track of where anything is on the field here. It's all right to play. Like, it's pretty fast. It's pretty straightforward. But, yeah, like, I definitely found myself kind of at loose ends with this one. Like, I didn't really end up coming away from it feeling much of anything about it, other than that I might be getting old because this was a little too fast for me to follow.
Yeah, fair enough. You know, I decided, you know, like, it's another soccer game. I'm not terribly interested in soccer. It's an easier game to, you know, represent on a console like the Super Nintendo, I feel, but we've already had so many of them that
this is true. Yeah.
This one feels pretty slight in comparison with the exception of, like, you know, how fast it runs, which I agree with you is pretty impressive. So I decided my opinion of this game was going to hinge on one thing. I discovered through reading the manual, you can set up like a big 64 team tournament. And if you want,
oh, cool,
you could set everything to be computer controlled.
Oh, I like that.
So I was like, oh, could I just watch like AI take on like a whole 64 team thing? Is that a thing I can set up? And no, the games between two computer controlled opponents just happen automatically. You don't get to watch them.
Oh, boo.
So
that sucks. That's disappointing.
So I'm okay with saying this one's either like unranked or maybe just F, because like there's already so much soccer on the system that like,
yeah,
this thing doesn't seem to be doing anything interesting. But I don't know. What do you think?
I think unranked probably for me. Okay. Like, I don't feel a bad way towards this. I just feel no kind of way at all, frankly.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of the same way. So, all right. So World Soccer 94, also, I believe, known as Strikers in a lot of other territories, is unranked with a lot of the other sports games.
And that largely does it for our sports game chunk, or our sports game unit for this episode, right?
Yeah, mostly. There's a couple of things that are, you know, you can maybe argue are sports, but well, we'll get to those when we get to those.
We will, yeah.
Well, okay, sorry. There is one more sport here. The greatest sport.
Yeah.
Barbie supermodel.
Oh, yeah.
Supermodeling, obviously.
The most important the greatest sport. Yeah. Barbie supermodel. Yeah. Who made Barbie supermodel?
Barbie supermodel, that was published by High Tech Expressions. Not the first one of those we're going to see today. It was developed by Banzai Entertainment and Tahoe Software Productions.
Okay.
Neither of which have, I think, more games to their credit than I have fingers on one hand.
Yeah, this does not feel like a game made by people with a long history of work in game design, I have to say. It is barely a game. Barely a game at all.
Something interesting about this game and the next game that I think that we're going to talk about here.
Yes.
Nintendo Power, in their 100th issue, did a 10 worst games released on Super Nintendo consoles list.
Okay.
This game and the next one were on it.
Wow. Okay. I don't know that I agree with that. I mean,
yeah,
we played some really bad games, and this one I don't think really ranks with those.
No, I don't think it does either. I mean, like, so this game sort of has two things going on. In one game mode, you are Barbie either driving a car or roller skating, or I think ice skating in one.
Yeah, one point. I think that's right.
Maybe riding a bike. I can't remember all the things that she does, but
some locomotion anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. And all of them, basically she is moving, to the right, and then later to the left on her own. And it is your job to either speed her up, slow her down, or move her, up and down to avoid obstacles and collect things. Along the way, you collect things that open up mini games. All of the mini games are based around memorization. Basically, you're shown a magazine cover and you either have to do Barbie's makeup to match the magazine cover that you just saw, or give her an outfit that matches the outfit that you just saw. Halfway through the level, you get a segment where she is practicing for the runway, and you have to remember a combination of button presses. And then at the end of the level, if you remember those button presses correctly and correctly do the routine, you get bonus points. There are, I think, only 4 levels. Not much to this one.
No. I mean,
I don't know. Is this,
this is a game, this feels like a game for very young children. Like, I mean, I was thinking about this. I think in terms of as a game, this is on the same level as Captain Novalin. Would you agree with that? Or do you think I'm being unfair to Captain Novalin?
Honestly, I might almost say I think this game is better than Captain Novalin.
I mean, you're probably right, because Captain Novalin is also a thing that is, like, barely a game, and it's also bad at the thing it's trying to do that's not being a game.
Yeah, like, this game isn't being super ambitious, but, like, it's competent at the things that it's trying to do.
It is competent at the things it's trying to do. It didn't, like, make me mad to play this. Like, it's just a game for really young kids, and, you know, there's basic motor skills, a little bit of basic memorization. I don't know. I mean, I don't hate this. You know, I think that there's probably something else going on with Nintendo Power ranking this as one of the 100 worst games on the system.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think this game gets a lot of crap for being a game for girls. And, like, on one hand, I do think it sucks that video games and toy aisles in general are so gender segregated that video games definitely ended up being a boys thing. And so there just aren't as many games that are really geared towards young girls around this time.
Yeah, it does suck. Definitely.
Yeah. I think it sucks that, like, this is, you know, what they got, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
I think there should have been more stuff that would have appealed. And I mean, like, here's the thing, like, the Super Nintendo did have a lot of games that appealed to girls. They just weren't being actively marketed to. And
Yeah, that's the thing.
And there, like, wasn't a big deal about making more games have more options as far as, like, you know, women protagonists and girl protagonists and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that all sucks. But, like, you know, so again, like, this game is very simple. And I don't think it's a crime to be simple. Maybe it's a crime to be simple when your cartridges probably cost like $50 to $60 and you may not really know what you're getting into, but also, like, I don't know. I mean, like, Barbie, like you see, like, the Barbie cover, like, it's literally the doll on the cover. So, like,
right.
I don't know who would have bought this for, like, an older teen girl who, you know, like.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think they would have. And I mean, I think this game probably did really good business in rental shops, is my guess.
I will say that we did rent it because my little sister wanted to play it, but she was too young to know how the controls work. So I played it for her back in the day.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, I think that you have to look at this game for what it is, and I don't think it's bad. I agree with you on everything you just said. I don't think this is bad at being the thing it is. So I also probably wouldn't feel comfortable paying, like, a full retail game price for this, but good Lord, I could say that about so many games on the Super Nintendo.
I don't know. This one's hard to rank because it's completely competent at what it's doing, but what it's doing isn't much. Like, you know, even as limited as the gameplay is, there's only 4 levels, I think.
Yeah. So yeah,
there's just not much here.
Not really. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. What are you feeling about this one?
Part of me is tempted just, like, on principle to put this in C, but I think it may be a D just because it's so light on content, on, like, different things to different levels and stuff. But, like, you know, I don't know. Like, it almost feels weird to rank it at all, you know?
Yeah, it kind of does. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of torn between C and D as well. Because, like, as a game for really young kids, I think this is fine. You know, like, just basic, you know, like, speed up, slow down, avoid the obstacles, memorization games. Like, I'm not some stickler who's like, hey, all games for really young kids have to be educational. Like, I you know, that is definitely not a stance that I have.
Yeah, no.
I think I'm kind of feeling like C. I'm kind of feeling like C. Maybe
I'm kind of feeling like C too, honestly.
If for no other reason than because, like, that's going to piss off, like, the right kind of people or be like, what are you talking about? Like, all these other things that I take as an authority say Barbie's one of the worst games ever made. And it's like,
right, yeah. I don't,
have you played it? Have you ever, like, looked into it? Or do all you know about it is that it's Barbie?
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's put it in C. That sounds good to me. I mean, look, if you want to look me in the face and tell me that you'd rather be playing, you know, like the Dragon's Lair game or Faceball 2000 than this, yeah, go for it. You know,
I don't know. This game is fine. It's not for us.
It's not for us.
And admittedly, it's not for the kinds of people who were largely playing Super Nintendo games at the time, but I think that's more of a failure of...
That's the market's failure, not this game's, you know.
Exactly.
Like, the thing is, there should be enough games like Barbie Supermodel on the Super Nintendo that we can compare them to each other and be like, well, this one's doing it a lot better than these other ones. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the way this does its thing. It's just the thing it's doing is extremely simple and straightforward. So,
you know what, like, honestly, like if you think Barbie Supermodel is worse than the Incredible Crash Dummies, you absolutely deserve to be forced to play through the entirety of the Incredible Crash Dummies is all I have to say.
Yeah, that's 100% true. So next up, we do have the other game that they apparently put on this list. A game that in our records is called Beethoven, the Ultimate Canine Caper, but on the game's title screen seems to be called Beethoven Second. Which is the movie that this is based on. So...
Everything for this game except for its title screen that I could find calls it Beethoven the Ultimate Canine Caper.
So strange.
Yeah, I guess because there wasn't a first, you know, a Beethoven game for the first movie, so but still it's weird. But yeah, this one also comes to us from High Tech Expressions.
Yep.
This one's developed by Rydell Software Productions. I almost wonder if like Nintendo Power had it out for companies like High Tech Expressions because they weren't around anymore to piss off.
Right. Yeah. It's like, well, we can take some free shots at High Tech. Because, yeah, this game is not good. I wouldn't say it's good, but it is. Look, we've played much worse games starring dogs on the Super Nintendo, right? You know?
Yeah.
But it's Beethoven. You know him. He's the big slobbery St. Bernard that drives Charles Grodin crazy. First movie, very popular, caused a sequel to happen. I never saw the sequel, personally. The only Beethoven movie I ever saw was the first one.
Yeah, I think I did see the sequel, and unsurprisingly, not...
Not that good?
Yeah, not as interesting, not as good. I mean, like, look, the first one was one of those generic... Disney family movies. Or was it Disney?
I don't think it was. It just has that feel.
The villain was played by like a Disney stock actor whose name escapes me at the time. So maybe that's why I'm...
Oh yeah, that guy. We talked about this guy who was like, he was the bad guy in a bunch of like Herbie movies and stuff, right?
Well, no. He was the good guy in a bunch of Herbie movies.
Okay, got it. Dean Jones.
He was the protagonist in one of them, along with Don Knotts, who was another stock Disney actor in these generic family movies that kept coming out. Okay,
so this, it looks like, was a Universal... This was a Universal movie.
Okay.
It was written by John Hughes, which is sort of interesting. Or, well, the original Beethoven was written by John Hughes, who I think most people know for, you know, all of the Brat Pack movies from the 80s, like... You know, 16 Candles and Breakfast Club and all that. But he actually had kind of a second career writing, like, children's movies in the 90s. Like, he also wrote, like, Home Alone.
Did he write another movie that we're going to be talking about here in a little bit?
That's entirely possible, yeah. Yeah.
I want to say he either was the writer or was tapped to write it at one point.
I think that might be right, because this was sort of where he was at in the career at this point.
Yeah.
Zany kids movies.
Also, like, there's like weirdly, like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm going off on a tangent now, and I'm like talking mostly about the first movie, which isn't even as relevant here. So yeah, let's just talk about this game. You play as the titular St. Bernard.
Have to save your puppies.
Yeah. This game is almost a little bit similar to the Barbie game in that all the stages have kind of two modes. One where you're going to look for the puppy, and then another where you have to carry the puppy to Beethoven's wife? Do dogs have wives? I don't know.
This dog has a wife. This dog definitely seems like it has a, like he has a wife. It's a side-scrolling platformer. It has a, because you're playing as a dog, the character you're playing as is much wider than he is tall, which is not a thing I ever like in platform games. Not ever a fan of that. But, you know, it doesn't control horrifically, and the levels are at least kind of designed around the shape of the character you're playing as. So, you know, it's not too bad. I do kind of like that two-part level structure, so.
It's not bad, and as far as, like, escort missions go, like, when you've got the puppy, it's never going to, like, it's never in danger. You know, you just have to, you know, carry it from point A to point B.
Yeah.
So, at least there's that. As Beethoven, you can pick up things like the puppy, but also power-ups that'll increase your health. You can bark at enemies, which is your primary means of attacking. Basically, you can charge up the bark for a really loud bark, which will do more damage. And
yeah,
I do kind of like the conceit here where, like, things aren't, like, being defeated by Beethoven. They're running away.
They're just running away, yeah. Yeah, no, I didn't realize that's what was happening the first time I barked at a poodle so hard it disappeared. And it definitely, to me, looked like Beethoven had, like, barked at a toy poodle so hard that it like, disintegrated. And I was like, geez, that's pretty rough. But, yeah, clearly there's, like, there's little speed lines. It's just, you know, zooming out of there. So I like that too. It's a good way to make this game a little less violent feeling than a lot of platformers can tend to be.
Yeah, which I think works for the source material that we're going with here. There's also, like, a mechanic in which Beethoven can get wet, and you can, like, save the wetness, if you will, until there's a lot of enemies on screen, and then you can shake and the water will cause all of the enemies on screen to run away. And that's pretty much what you do. You run, you jump, you bark, you shake the water off of you, and you pick up things. And
yeah, that's it.
And also, like Barbie, there are only four stages here. Although, again, the stages have two parts to them. So
yeah, this feels a little more substantial as a game than Barbie did.
Oh, yeah,
I wouldn't say it's a better game, but it is. There's a little more to it in a more traditional, like, video game sense.
Yeah.
I will say the one thing I don't like about this game is the very sad little noise that Beethoven makes anytime he gets hit. It's just like this little, like, very realistic sounding, like, dog whimper.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I don't like hearing that.
Yeah.
It makes me feel bad.
Yeah. Like, hey, video game people, can we knock it off with the distressed animal noises in games, please? Or like, let us toggle them off, maybe?
Yeah, not a fan of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. This is, I mean, look, we have definitely played worse platformers than this, right?
Yeah, this is certainly not one of the 10 worst Nintendo games ever released. Certainly, you know, I mean, not even as of 1996 or 7, whenever that issue came out. Like, there are 10 worse games that we've already played on the Super Nintendo alone than this.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know, having said that, I do think it's a little bit clunky. Like, there isn't a dedicated run button, so sometimes, like, getting enough speed to jump over obstacles is really weird, especially given the whole, the dog is a longer character than you would usually play in a game like this. So
right, yeah.
That makes it kind of rough sometimes to jump over things and not take damage. One thing that, you know, I was kind of impressed by a little bit, and I mostly only bring this up because I'm going to have a comparison of this done pretty wrong in another game. There's in the second level where you're going through a park with playgrounds and things like that, there's like those little springy turtle things that used to be staples of playgrounds.
They might
have been deemed too dangerous to keep around. And, you know, because I haven't seen one in a long time, although I also haven't spent a lot of time at a playground for children in the last 30 years or so. But, like, you know, I saw that and I was like, okay, it looks kind of like a background element, but there's a platform above it that I can't get to unless I get some height. So I wonder if this is a bouncy thing. And it was a bouncy thing. So I was like, okay, this read enough as an interactable bouncy thing that I was able to figure that out my first time through. So I was like, okay, that's good. You know, the game reads pretty well. It's just not anything spectacular, and, you know,
it's pretty short. It's not spectacular. It's just, it's fine as one of these, but it's not, There's not a lot to it.
Yeah, I'm almost thinking like this is another C game, but also I don't know if this is as good at doing what it's trying to do than Barbie was. So maybe it drops down a tier.
I think maybe it drops down a tier, but it's kind of on that borderline. I don't know if it was a little bit more intuitive to make your way through these levels, I think I would say it's a C game. But yeah, like I'm not talking about like things like I agree, like those platforms read correctly as what they were, but just there's a fair bit of like verticality in some of these levels, and that can be a little bit difficult to parse sometimes in terms of like what platform you need to be on to get to another one when there's not something like that. And I think that part of it could be better. So I would say D, but yeah, it's not a bad D, you know?
Yeah. I'm also like maybe not as crazy about the pacing of the game, because like when you attack, you have to stay still. Like you can bark in the air at least, but you can't charge it up, obviously, you know? And just because like a lot of your actions do have to be so purposeful, like when jumping over obstacles and things like that, it really does make you feel like you're backtracking a lot. And that just gets even worse when you've got to like go like, okay, I got to put the puppy down, go get some more water so I can shake, yep, you know, all the enemies off the screen. And yeah, it can feel kind of like, you know, it's a very slowly paced game in a way that I don't think works for it very well.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it's a D, I think. And that's fine. I mean, that's like, once again, we're not talking about The Adventures of Dr. Franken here, a game that I found absolutely miserable to play.
Yeah. Did like nobody at Nintendo Power actually play a lot of Super Nintendo games by that point? Is that the problem?
Maybe. Like, it's like, oh yeah, I heard this one was bad.
Yeah, there's so many worse games. But yeah, Beethoven, The Ultimate Canine Caper, we're going to be less charitable to that one than we were to Barbie Supermodel, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Also, it's weird that they play like that little sting of like Beethoven's Ninth or something like that.
Yeah,
complete a level, because it sounds too sinister for like a level complete music.
It sounds very sinister. Yeah, like the choice to use Beethoven's, the composer Beethoven's music as background music in this game is, you know, it makes sense on all kinds of levels, but the way it doesn't make sense is in the actual vibe of the game, where it's a weird fit to have all of that going on here. But that sting is like the worst of it. It's like, what's going to happen?
Metal Combat, Falcon's Revenge. This is a Super Scope game, so I don't think we're going to do much.
We couldn't play it.
Yeah.
No. I looked at a little footage of it on YouTube, and it looks pretty cool. But, unplayable by us at the present time.
All right. So we're just going to say unranked for that one. Get that in there.
And now we're going to the Koei Zone.
Oh, God. We're going to the Koei Zone.
They put out three different Koei strategy games on the Super Nintendo in 1 month. It's this month. It's what we're talking about right now. It happened.
Yeah. It's kind of wild that three of them came out at once. My guess is that like these are older games that were all being localized in tandem, I guess.
I guess so. Nobunaga's Ambition actually has a copyright 1988 thing on the title screen, so clearly that one is quite a bit older than the system. And Genghis Khan certainly looks older, so I guess, do you want to just talk about all three of these as at one time, or
we might as well? Yeah, these are all,
we might as well, they're functionally identical games.
Yeah, these are all historical based strategy games from Koei. We've got Genghis Khan 2 Clan of the Grey Wolf, Nobunaga's Ambition, and Romance of the Three Kingdoms 3. Nobunaga's Ambition is about the Warring States era in Japan. Genghis Khan 2 and Romance of the Three Kingdoms are about ancient China. We've kind of said before, these games are pretty much inscrutable to us. Like, these are not our kinds of games.
Pretty much.
We don't really think that they could possibly work all that well on the Super Nintendo. There's just a lot going on. These are very, very... very what I would like to call crunchy.
Heavy.
Yeah, crunchy games.
Oh yeah, they're pick your starting region that your character is going to control. Now, here are 20 different options for how you can interface with your own area, your own region and the surrounding ones. What do you want to do? Yeah. And I just go, I want to take a nap.
Yeah,
I don't want this.
I want to play something else is what I want to do. These are just not for me.
They're not for me either. And I will say, I think Nobunaga's ambition was a little bit easier to start up and get going in. I'm not really sure why that is, because functionally it's really exactly the same as these other two. But I got into a battle in it, and that was a little bit of something different at least. But I can't rank these. I don't know enough about them, and I'm not willing to commit the kind of time and effort I would need to get my head around them so that I could speak cogently about how they play.
Yeah, same here. Although, actually, ironically, Nobunaga's Ambition is the one game I literally could not start up because it defaults to mouse controls, and emulator doesn't play well with those, so...
Cool. Yeah.
Which honestly, like, probably means that game is actually a little bit easier to control, because, like, the SNES mouse seems like a natural fit for these kinds of games, but...
Yeah, it totally does.
But yeah, we are not in a position to rank these, so these are all going on the U tier. Sorry, Koei. Sorry, everybody who likes these kinds of games, but we are just not the kind of people who can give you a fair assessment of them.
Someday, Koei is gonna figure out how to make Dynasty Warriors, and those I will play. This is not that time, though.
It is time, however, for Side Pocket. I think other billiards game on the Super Nintendo. I can't remember what the first one was called now.
We just played it a little while ago, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. What an impression it made.
I will say this one makes more of an impression on me. So who made this game, straight up?
This one is also by Data East.
And it was developed by, I saw, Iguana Entertainment.
Yeah.
Who most people would know for their later games like Turok the Dinosaur Hunter. You know what? This game was maybe the only real surprise for me in this wrap-up episode. It actually is good enough that it almost makes me think that there's a way a standalone pool game could be worthwhile. I don't think there's quite enough here for that, but it is so it's a very attractive, stylish game. I think the music is really good, and I think that the way you play pool in it is also very intuitive. So as far as pool games go, I think this is a straight up good one.
Yeah, I mean, this one didn't leave quite the impression on me, although I was very surprised by its soundtrack. The soundtrack in this game punches way above its weight class.
It's a banger, yeah. There's like a jukebox mode where you can just listen to the music from the game, and like, it's all good. It's all just like good tunes. This game has the vibe of being like a playable Steely Dan song, and that's like very high praise from me. So yeah,
it's got a little bit more going on. Like, you know, you've got I don't know if it's got quite the selection of billiards games, but it does have like little bonus games where, you know, it's like telling you like, hey,
it has the puzzle mode basically.
Yeah, like, hey, try to hit this ball into this pocket specifically. Right. Things like that. Which,
don't hit any of these shot glasses that are lined up around the ball.
Yeah.
Which is nice. One of the issues with the other pool game that we recently played that I can't remember the name of.
Championship Pool. I just checked.
Championship Pool. That we found the way that it visualized like how, like predicting how the cue ball is going to move was really odd and counterintuitive. That does not happen with this. This is very straightforward. It's very, very easy to figure out what's going to happen when you hit the ball. The like little meter for like the strength of your shot is both kind of like rendered in like a pretty stylish way and very easy to read. So yeah, like look, it's still a pool game, but I think this within the limited confines of what this game is doing, it's doing it well.
I was kind of thinking like maybe this is a C tier game, but I don't know. Do you think it goes higher than that?
I think it is it's still a C-tier game. Like, I think if this game had, like, a story mode or something, which, frankly, it kind of feels like this game could support a story mode.
Yeah.
With, like, the vibe it's giving off. You know, if it had, like, a thing where you played, like, various other, like, you know, pool hustlers, and there were, like, little, like, story scenes in between it, then I think you could get into the territory where this is, like, a B-rank game. But, yeah, for what this is, I think it's a very strong C.
Okay.
I love also that we get to see the Iguana Entertainment, is it Iguana Interactive? The Iguana logo guy, the little realistic iguana with a little pool cue in his lizard hand. That's really fun.
Real lounge lizard, you might say.
Yeah, hey-o. Right? Side Pocket. Yeah,
Side Pocket. Check it out, or at the very least, check out the soundtrack. And hey, all you vaporwave artists out there, this soundtrack just seems like the kind of thing that is begging for, like, vaporwave remixes. So
it really is, yeah. So
all right, well, yeah. Moving right along then, that is Side Pocket. Next up on the old list, we've got Dennis the Menace. Based on the movie specifically that came out in 1993, you know, they sure made that into a movie, didn't they?
Inconceivable to me that in the 90s we were still at the point where people liked Dennis the Menace enough.
I mean, like, okay, this movie happened because that license probably cost a song, right?
Yeah, it probably happened because the license cost a song and because, like, everyone thought they could do a Home Alone.
There's surprisingly, like, a stacked cast here. Like, you've got Walter Matthau, you've got Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, sure. No, I mean, you know, this was a movie that they really, I mean, look, we're talking about a video game based on it. Like, if they didn't think that this thing could do some kind of business, they wouldn't have bothered to pay for a game tie-in. Though they did pay Ocean to make the tie-in, and that's very frequently not a good sign.
Yeah. So this is a 2D side-scrolling platformer. I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing the first time I played this.
Nope.
It is not obvious. This game really just begs for some on-screen prompts just to kind of give the player, like, a little bit, like, hey, just like a quick message, like, find the switch to get into the attic, find all of the coins to finish the level, do whatever it is you need to do to get into the basement. Like,
yeah, I mean, you're talking about the kind of direction that other games from this time period would have had.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's very annoying that it just gives you no guidance at all.
Yeah.
And then you're just kind of set loose in these levels as the most garbage little kid in the world to spray a water gun and, you know, slingshot ball bearings at various poor, unfortunate animals. And I don't know, man, this game did not make me feel good.
No, the only thing that this game's got going for it is that it produced a very big laugh in me when, like, all of the sudden I was being chased by a giant Walter Matthau head. And I'm just like,
that is easily the best part of the game.
It was very unexpected for me. And it just really, like, hit me in a way that I'm just like, oh God, Walter Matthau's after me. That was very funny. Other than that, like, yeah, I mean,
that's very funny,
it's got all the hallmarks of a really mediocre game, like enemies that take way too many hits to get out of your way. Check. Clumsy platforming that sort of forces you into, like, oh, I guess I need to go up there at some point. I probably need to backtrack, in fact, to get up there because I fell. That's their respawning enemies. Yep, you got them.
Level design that is hard to parse, where it's sometimes very difficult to tell what is a platform and what is a barrier you can't move through. Definitely got that.
Yeah. Like, oh no, this plank is actually a barrier. This is a wall. Those other planks that you saw, those are foreground, but this one's a wall for some reason.
Yes, they do look almost identical, but yeah, go to hell, right? Yeah.
Oh, and the whole reason I brought up that thing about the bouncy turtle in Beethoven, in the Beethoven game, is that you have to do something similar here with Jack in the Boxes, but those things read as enemies to me for the first time I saw them.
Uh-huh.
I had no idea I was supposed to use them to actually, like, jump up onto higher platforms. So
yeah, that's really annoying.
I had to learn that by watching a long play. So that is an example of that sort of thing being done poorly.
I do not like this game. I think
neither do I.
It is ugly to look at. It has annoying music, and it is very annoying to play.
Is this an F-tier game, you think?
I think this is an F-tier game, yeah.
It's honestly, like, more competent than a lot of games on the F-tier right now, but it's
still... It is, but it's still there. Really just obnoxious.
Yeah, so that's Dennis the Menace. I don't think we need to talk much more about that one. Nah. Called simply Dennis in other territories to not... confuse people with the other Dennis the Menace character.
Right. The British Dennis the Menace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, two characters named Dennis the Menace happen to become things in different parts of the world at the exact same time. One of the craziest stories I've ever heard. But
it must have been kind of confusing for Ocean, who was a British, which was a British company,
oh, yeah,
to be making a game based on the American Dennis the Menace. Like, oh, what are you working on? Oh, yeah, Dennis the Menace game. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. The little, it's like the red hair. And that. No, not that one. Not that one.
Let's see. Next up, we're almost done. We've got F1 Pole Position. It's another F1.
Yeah, it's pretty competently made, but it's so boring.
Yep. No music while you're racing.
The screen is like permanently split screen, where you always have a view. If you're playing one player, you always have a view behind your car, on the lower slice of the screen, and then there's like a couple of different camera angles you can have for the upper side. The upshot of this is that all your actual, you know, gameplay action is squeezed into a really tiny horizontal strip that I don't like very much. But yeah, I don't know. It's competently made, but it is completely on the opposite side of the spectrum from the racing games that I like. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do we even rank this one or...
I don't know. I don't...
What do you think?
It's either unranked or it's like a D, basically. Like, there's nothing wrong with it, but I don't really like anything about it either. I'm pretty willing to treat this essentially as a sports game, which I fundamentally do not like or understand, versus a racing game, which I could have actual opinions about. So yeah, unranked.
Oh, unranked. Okay. All right. Unranked then.
A lot of unranked stuff today.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why it's in the wrap.
So just before we move on to our last game, the one note I have for this one.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
F1 Pole Position. One too many Fs for my taste.
All right. Well, last but not least, although I don't know, maybe close to it, we got Mario's Time Machine. This is a Mario game that does not come to us from Nintendo. It comes to us from Software Toolworks.
That's right. It's an edutainment game.
It sure is. So we already had one of these. We had Mario Is Missing.
Yep. The more famous one of these two, I think.
Yeah. Which is kind of, you know, trying to do like the Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego thing. This one is trying to do the Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego thing. Which is funny because we've had versions of Where in the World and Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego on the Super Nintendo.
We have.
Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego was a pretty old game by the time it came out on the Super Nintendo and was pretty... It felt kind of old.
It did, yeah.
Whereas Where in Time was a much more recent game by that point, and it felt like it as well. It was a much better game on the Super Nintendo.
For sure.
So I guess you could say that Mario's Time Machine is a less necessary game on the Super Nintendo.
Sure, yeah. It also feels like even stranger to have the Mario license, you know, papered on top of it in some ways than Mario Is Missing did.
It's a very strange game. And so here was my like first impression of this one is like,
sure,
what the hell do the buttons do?
Right. Yeah. Same for me.
I'm just in this room. There are five pedestals with things on them, and I kind of just have to guess, like, what do these buttons do? What am I supposed to be doing right now? It is not obvious. Software Toolworks, put some freaking prompts in your game, okay? Like, this game needed it.
Please, I'm begging you.
When Mario is standing over a pedestal, have a little button that says, hey, this button means take. I forget which button it was now, but, like, just, you know, like, a button, for example. A, take. That's all you need. Have little prompts in the corner of the screen. Say like L will bring up your timulator. R will bring up your homework.
Mario's gotta finish that essay.
Yeah. This game desperately needed that. And I wouldn't be surprised if kids and parents who, you know, like tried getting through this thing probably got fed up and quit almost immediately because of
that. I would imagine that happened quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if you rented it and didn't get the manual with it.
Yeah. Right. Now, like, I spent the first like 10 minutes playing this game, just trying to figure out how to do anything that the game wanted me to do. Do you want to describe the flow of like what you're supposed to do to complete objectives in this game?
Yeah. So in order to complete objectives, you have to grab one of the artifacts, and then you need to bring up your little time machine, and you have to enter in the location and year that you need to travel to in order to return that artifact to its rightful owner, because apparently Bowser has a time machine and just went back in time and stole a bunch of artifacts. He like straight up went all Carmen Sandiego on.
He did, yeah.
Now, to do this, you have to go through this weird surfing section after you've put in your date and location.
Yeah.
The surfing sections consists of needing to navigate just a flat, watery area. Mm-hmm. You have to pick up 10 mushrooms and then go in a whirlpool. Don't go in the whirlpool before you've picked up 10 mushrooms, or else you'll just get sent back to the Bowser Museum.
Yeah.
Also, don't hit a mine or you lose all your mushrooms. Also, if you entered the wrong date or location,
you'll just get sent back
after you complete the objective, after you complete the surfing section. It's incredibly unintuitive. I don't know why they even make you do this. It is really silly.
It is extremely silly. I don't even know, because this is, I think much like Mario is Missing, this has a substantially different version on computers that has like a bunch of like more animation and like voice acting and stuff. I don't even know if the surfing sections are in that. And I don't know. Like, the whole flow of this thing is really odd.
Yeah. I mean, they're so like not unrelated to anything else going on. Like, if they had just, you know, given you like a generic Mario level to play,
right?
It, you know, like that would have been better. Like, it's presented as if it's a 2D platformer. You've got like a
sure
what mostly looks like this Mario sprite from Mario World, except, you know, like, I don't know, maybe the
not maybe as well drawn or something. It's a little off.
It's the Harbor Freight version.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, or the Wish.com version.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's. That's all very strange. It's
but, yeah.
And then once you're in a scene, you know, once you're in a past city, you have a couple of places where you can talk to people that again, I'm not sure why it wasn't just more menu based or why there isn't like a prompt that goes over Mario's head telling him, hey, press this button to enter the door and talk to people.
Yeah.
Also, like, all the conversations are much more directed. Like, you don't, Like one question leads to another. It's not the case like from what I remember in Mario is Missing, where you have a list of questions to ask.
Yeah, it's not like that. There's often like two different sort of questions you can ask here, but like they don't really. Yeah, it doesn't really accomplish that feeling of like making you feel like you're like grilling somebody for information. It's just, here's some conversations that you can watch play out, that you can read. Which one do you want to see first? Hope you're taking notes.
Right. And then when you do all of that, you want to use that information to bring up your homework and fill in the blanks that are in, you know, the little report about, you know, the whatever artifact it is that you are returning.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, honestly, like, you can mostly suss out on your own without talking to
pretty
people.
Pretty much, yeah.
I watched a long play of this. So basically, like, there's three rounds of this where, you know, each round is another room in Bowser's Museum and there's five more artifacts. So there's 15 scenes in all. There's no randomization, so I don't know, you know, what that really does for replay value. Although the game does expect you to replay it, because I watched the long play And there's a bad ending if you don't finish the game fast enough.
What the hell?
Yeah, like Bowser just gets away, and it's like, if you want to see the good ending, you need to finish the game faster. And it's just
that's
like,
really obnoxious.
Why? Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess maybe it's like the game thinking like, okay, now let's see how well you retained that information that you got. Like, can you just fill out the report without having to talk to people now? I guess that's what it means for you to do. But like some of it is, you know, I was kind of like, okay, I can kind of see like this isn't a terrible way of learning very specific historical events, but it's not very thorough.
Is it fun either? Like, I mean, it's like, that's the other thing. It's like,
yeah,
is this actually going to be any fun for the kids that are supposed to be learning from it?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of these things where it's like, hey, we're making learning fun. And I don't know if it's, if you've made a thing that kids are learning all that, you know, all that much that they wouldn't learn in school anyway. And I don't know that you're actually making it fun. So I don't know if I can say this game works on either of the things it's trying to do.
Yep. I pretty much agree. I don't know. I find the juxtaposition of Mario and these like realistically drawn human characters that he meets and all of the scenes, really, really odd in a way that's like kind of entertaining, but that's not the game's intention. And none of the actual stuff the game wants me to do is like well conveyed at all. So I don't know. This is, I kind of wondered about this one before we played it, but it makes sense to me. Truly. It does that. Mario is missing is at least a little bit famous as far as like weird off-brand Mario games go, and this one is not.
Yeah, I think that Mario is missing is at least a little bit better. I think it's a little bit more fun, and it's a little bit better at actually like teaching things about the world. I still don't know if it's great. Like, I still don't know if it has the depth of knowledge that something like the Carmen Sandiego series had.
Probably not, but I don't know. It feels like a more honest attempt to use Mario in an edutainment game than this does.
Where is Mario is missing on our list right now?
I think it's a D. It's a D game.
Oh, wow. It's all the way down to D. Well, this one's certainly not better than that, so...
It's certainly not. I guess the question is it further down far enough that it's an F tier game, or is it also a D, but just a significantly worse one?
Whew, I don't know. That's a tough call. Like, cause like in some ways, like it's not absolutely terrible. Like, I don't know if it's quite enough of a failure to be an F tier game, but I also like am really having a hard time justify why that is.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. Maybe this is an F tier game.
It might be an F tier game. It's not good. It's not good.
Yeah, I think we're gonna put this one in F tier.
All right. Well, that's it. That's our last game for December 1993. I think pretty conclusively the worst month of the Super Nintendo in terms of like quality of game releases so far.
Yeah, I mean, like, the good games we've had TMNT Tournament Fighters, Art of Fighting, Inspector Gadget, and Lufia, the Fortress of Doom, which have all gone in the A or B tiers, but
yeah,
everything else has been C or worse, and there's been a lot of them.
Yep, it's true.
So, yeah, not a great month for the Super Nintendo, and as we get into 94 is the biggest year of games for the Super Nintendo. We're going to see some pretty high highs, but I have a feeling that we're also going to see a lot of shovelware coming out.
Yeah. It's sort of inevitable when you have games getting released at that volume. But that's going to be a little while before we get to that, because next time we're going back again.
We are. We're
going
to go back in time to 1991. September 1991, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And that means that next time you hear us, it is going to be the Playing with Power episode about the Nintendo Power issue from September 1991. And then we're going to do what we did with August of that year and take a look at the games that came out in our current format for discussing games. So we hope you join us for Playing with Power. We hope you join us for those episodes about the games from September 91. And before you know it, we're going to be back to to the start of 94, and we'll dig into what's going on then. So yeah, until then, we hope that you've enjoyed this. Even though the games weren't good, we tried to have fun talking about them. So yeah, until next time, I'm Amy Zero.
I'm Chase Keith.
Play it loud.
For show notes, game rankings, links to social media, research references, and more, check out our website, snescapades.show. Our intro-outro song is How Now Brown Cow by TechnoAx, who very generously offers a ton of great music for free at technoax.com, TEKNOAXE.com. Thanks for listening.